So that when they need to watch that again later, I could just watch it on repeat. It's very good. All future final readings will be done that way. I am more used to speaking to a group of year two children. So if my voice at any point gets very loud or very serious and you're not paying attention, I think I have got my red and yellow card in my bag. So you've been warned. So, as I mentioned, we are gearing up to the coronation of King Charles on the 6th of May. This is an event that I imagine has been in the planning for years, down to every last tiny detail. There's no margin for error. Every person involved knows exactly what to do, what to say, where to be, and every possible eventuality to be considered. The world is going to be watching this coronation, as they did the coronation of Elizabeth in 1953. The crowds will line the streets with flags and bunting, the bands will play, and everyone will be dressed in their finest. People will remember where they were and what they were doing on the day that Charles was crowned king. This is a moment of history. The coronation brings with it a national holiday, street parties, and memorabilia. The coronation of Queen Elizabeth and now King Charles sounds a world away from the version that we see in the Gospels and the accounts of Jesus riding into Jerusalem on the back of a donkey. No gold, no carriage. This is a story that we know very well. Leading up to this, Jesus has been travelling around Jerusalem and healing. We meet him as he's travelling from Jericho to Jerusalem with his disciples. A journey of about 15 miles, which on foot would have taken about 7 hours without breaks. I think with our children, maybe a little longer. According to John, prior to the entry into Jerusalem, Jesus has already arrived in Bethany and has eaten with Martha, Mary, and Lazarus before continuing on his journey. Matthew, Mark, and Luke do not have this account. So maybe Jesus arrived and rested before making the final part of his journey on the donkey. Or maybe he's made a long journey on foot, and his final part of the journey, he's going to ride on the donkey. It's unlikely that Jesus needs to ride on the donkey. He's made the majority of the journey by foot, and it seems quite pointless to hop onto the donkey for the last couple of miles. We know that the riding of the donkey is in order to fulfill prophecy in Zechariah, which says, "Look, your king is coming to you. He is righteous and victorious, yet he is humble, riding on a donkey, riding on a donkey's colt." I'm not sure how it would go down with King Charles if someone suggested that, with the world watching, he rides on Westminster Abbey on the colt. In Matthew, we read very clearly that it is not the donkey that Jesus rides, but the colt, a young male not yet fully grown. I think this is absolutely beautiful. So often I think that we have a picture of what something should look like or how someone should behave, but Jesus goes against this. He says, "No, I'm not riding in a chariot or on the finest stallion. There won't be a great announcement of my arrival. I don't need all the faff and the frills. I don't need a fanfare or a formal procession. I'm coming on the back of a young donkey." This may make me laugh, isn't it, much? But I can see a lot of myself in that colt. This young donkey is seemingly insignificant, just getting on with daily life. Nothing exceptional. It's the unexpected participant in the story, feeling out of place and insecure. Maybe there is self-doubt and uncertainty in the colt's capabilities. Why me? Why is Jesus calling me? Why is he choosing me? What's he asking me to do? Surely Jesus will realise he's made a mistake in asking me, that he should have asked somebody else. Jesus doesn't need the donkey to fulfil his mission, but he uses it anyway. Obviously I know that the colt isn't thinking all of these things, but I'm sure we know what it is like to feel unprepared for what God is asking of us, to wonder why he is asking us and not somebody better equipped. I wonder if the older donkey thought, "Why the colt and not me? I'm more mature, more reliable, more experienced." I don't know about you, but I know there have been times that God has asked something of me and I have procrastinated over it. asking for all the details of the plan before I say yes or no. Jesus doesn't need me to fulfil his plan, but he still invites me to be a part of it. In this account, Jesus is calling the colt. I'm sure the young donkey could have dug its hooves in and refused to go. It could have bucked Jesus off and made an embarrassing scene. Jesus hasn't given the details of what is going to follow or say what is required of the donkey. He's simply saying, will you go with me? Do you trust me? I wonder what happened to the colt afterwards. Did the donkey and colt go back to the village and to their owner? It can seem so simple when God calls us, and yet sometimes it seems he asks so much of us. We can be obedient to his call and then feel like our lives continue unchanged. We might ask, what was the purpose of something? Why did we go through that experience? Yet we know that any encounter with Jesus leads us changed, happen it not. We cannot encounter God and not be changed. So do we hear Jesus' call to us? And what is our response? Is it a straight no? Do we question God's choice? Is it yes, but with conditions? Or is it yes, even when we don't see the full picture? So my question, it's not an easy one. What is God asking of you? What is he calling you to be a part of? And what is your response? We know that the coronation of King Charles is likely to cost around £100 million. Yet the question that God asks us, I think, is far more costly.